I have some questions about this bird thing.
Sure. First of all, we should talk about, like, what it is. So, yeah. Like, quick backstory on this. About, I want to say a month or two ago, all over Santa Monica, and probably the rest of the west side of Los Angeles, these scooters just started showing up everywhere. And they're electric scooters. They have a QR code on them. And there's an app you can download. They're called Bird or Bird Scooters. And all you have to do is scan a scooter's QR code with this app, and it starts tracking your riding. And it's a little electric scooter. You can ride it anywhere you want, basically. It is so cool. And we just tried one a little while ago.
Okay. So I have some questions about this bird.
Dig into it.
This is the name, Bird Scooter?
I don't know. It just says Bird. I don't know if you, like, ride a bird, you know, or I don't know what they're trying to establish as the, like, nomenclature.
But it looks like a scooter.
It looks like a scooter.
Yeah. Okay. So my first question is, can you buy one?
You can. In fact, somebody that I was talking to looked up online how much they cost. Just not the Bird branded one, but a comparable electric scooter that you could just purchase is around $400 or $500, I think.
Well, then, so that would be you can't buy, like, a Bird scooter.
I don't think you can buy a Bird scooter. I think Bird is just a company that is powering this fleet of electric scooters with the app that you can scan and pay for on a per minute basis and ride them around. And they also maintain them and recharge them and all that good stuff.
So what is the ultimate goal?
For Bird?
Yeah.
Probably to put thousands of these things in every urban setting that they can put them in.
So, like, the streets would just be, like, littered with scooters?
That's the thing. That's what's so weird about it. I don't know what Santa Monica has to say about it. I can't imagine that they called up City Hall and asked if they could put...
Especially in Santa Monica.
Santa Monica is so crazy about regulation and all these things. So I think that's their goal. And I think that's the only... And as I thought about this company and this product specifically, they have... It's amazing because they don't have to buy a single ad to spread awareness of these things. All they had to do was buy... They probably have, like, a fleet of 50 of them.
Hmm.
So they probably spent about $25,000 on a fleet of these things. They wrote a little bit of software to make it so that you could purchase time with them and so that they could track the location of each of these things. But the cool thing is that they're the buzz of the town. Everybody, if you just sit next to a park bench where one of these things is sitting and listen to people as they walk past it, every single person says something about it. Oh, I've seen these things. Oh, it's like the electric scooter. Oh, they look so cool. And you're a spectacle when you're whizzing down the street on one of these things because it's novel. There really aren't these...
Do most people not understand the concept of an electric scooter or haven't seen them in general?
That's the first time I've ever seen an electric scooter. Mm. Every once in a while, if you've lived in or around Venice Beach for long enough, every once in a while, you'll see some goober whiz by on a gasoline-powered scooter.
Mm.
But it looks like they've attached a lawnmower engine to a scooter, and it's big, and it's bulky, and it's dorky-looking. It's not cool. The thing about the Bird is that it looks like a Razor scooter. There's no big attachment on it. It is almost indistinguishable from a regular scooter. So when you're riding it, not to say that it looks cool to ride a scooter, but it's not as bad as the Segway, which is completely uncool. There's no human being on the planet could ride a Segway and look cool on a Segway. It's just incompatible entirely with coolness.
Wait, who's the coolest person right off the top of your head?
I don't even know. Badass? You mean badass,
like,
or just cool?
Could Jay-Z look cool
Picture
on
that.
A Segway?
Picture Jay-Z on a Segway. You tell me. What do you think?
Okay, so I had a chance to test this out a little bit ago, and I have heels on.
Yeah, they're heels compatible.
We found out they were heels compatible, which is really neat.
And you looked cool on it, like, honestly.
Now, let's say, though, I'm in my heels and I'm on my way and I, like, take this thing to the Huntley.
Yeah.
And I have to park it because I don't own it.
Right.
And so I have to leave it on the street.
Mm-hmm.
And then I go up, and then when I come back and I'm done with my evening,
yeah,
it's gone.
It's probably a good thing because I don't think you're allowed to ride them.
I might have been drinking coffee, Mike. I might have been drinking
yeah,
coffee.
Right. Huntley's known for its coffee. Well,
that brings up another question, but yeah. I'll let you answer that one first.
You can. So the idea is you just pick these things up and leave them wherever. And they charge you by the minute. So while you're engaged with it, while you've kind of claimed it and it's yours, I think it's 15 cents a minute or thereabouts. When you're done with it, if you take it to a location and you want to hang on to it, you can lock it without ending your ride and it'll continue to bill you. So if you're there, I can't do the math.
Yeah. So effectively, let's say I spend 90 minutes at the Huntley.
Yeah.
At 15 cents a minute?
I think it's 15 cents a minute.
Okay. So I'm basically billed $13.50. So depending on how far I'm going.
Wow, that's less than the cost of an Uber, really.
Yeah. I was just going to say, Uber would be the secondary, right?
Yeah.
Hmm. Okay. Another question.
Yeah.
So let's say, have these things made it to Century City or Beverly Hills?
Mm-mm. I don't think so.
Can you put one in your trunk and just take it there and then unlock it?
I think you could. It says on the scooter, ride anywhere. So you could take that super literally, you know, and scoot yourself over to Century City.
No, I mean like put it in my trunk.
I think you could. You agree to it. There's a terms and conditions screen that does pop up and you have to scroll to the bottom of it so that you've read it. But
I didn't
read it at all because I was so eager to get onto the bird and just go, you know, they could have, who knows what I agreed to. And they are GPS tracked. So they'll know if you run off with it, I suppose. But
you
could take it
anywhere.
Would
I see like a bird chopper coming after me?
Yeah, you don't want to see.
Driving towards Beverly Hills.
No, there's probably another dude on a bird scooter coming after you. Really intimidating image.
Well, the concept sounds really cool.
Yeah, it's amazing.
It looks really cool. It was fun.
It's super fun, and the process of ordering it is very easy. It's you download this app and a couple of taps, and you've activated it. Like you scan this QR code, you hit I want to claim it or ride it. The scooter beeps and then you're off and running.
So let's say that you and I wanted to go from Santa Monica to Marina Del Rey on a bird.
Yeah.
Well, two birds.
Yep.
Can we find two birds? Do we have to walk around?
Yeah. And this is the only frustrating part of it. So yes, there's a map. Basically you open up the bird app and I believe the first screen you see is the map of your area and it's got pins for every bird that is available. What's super annoying about it right now is that you can't remotely claim one.
Mm-hmm.
So what happened, you have to scan it physically.
We were walking over.
And
there's a chance someone else could take it before we got there.
And it's maddening because this happened to me the other day when I had finally, I was determined to try this because I've been watching people zip around town in these things for, like I said, a month or two now. And I said, this is the day. And so I open up this app to go look for them. And the closest available one was 3 or 4 blocks away. And as I was arriving, I saw somebody approach it, scan it, and then ride off with it. So I tried to do another one. And then the same thing happened again, where as I'm approaching it, I see somebody and I'm like, this person is going to be on there.
That could be frustrating.
So, and then at that point, I thought to myself, well, if I whiff this a third time, I'll have walked more distance than just having walked back to my place. Like, what's the point? But fortunately, the third one I was able to get. And then it changed the game for me. I don't see any value in walking anymore.
Okay. So, well, we'll have to see what happens with these.
Yeah.
You know, the example of us going from here to Marina Del Rey. And then depending on how long we stayed there and wanted to come back, you'd start looking at the cost of that versus a bike, right?
Yeah, but a bike, I mean, what are you going to do? You're going to go buy a bike and and have a bike. I mean, that sounds... I haven't done it yet.
No, it would be to rent. Like, you'd rent
a bike. Oh, to rent a bike. Yeah.
It's like 10 bucks to rent a bike.
Yeah, but you have to pedal a bike. See, that's the thing. It's
the lack of exercise.
Well, it's not so much that... It's more leisurely and fun, I think, to ride the scooter around. You can sort of see when you're on this bird scooter, you can kind of see how we're approaching. We're not there yet, but we're so close to existing in the wizarding world of Harry Potter, where you can just hop on a broom and zoom around. You know, we're almost there. These things don't leave the ground yet, but we're getting close. And it's fun. They go fast. They go surprisingly fast.
I was surprised how fast it was.
And you're just...
He was capable of.
And you can't ride a bike in heels, right? So...
Fair enough.
I'm pretty excited about it. You know, there's another... For a couple of years now, I've been lusting after this product called a Boosted Board, which is a Y Combinator company that produced this electric longboard. And those go super fast and are really cool. And I see them around the West Side all the time. I see people, probably tech people, zipping around on these things, and they go really fast. They can go like 25 miles an hour uphill or something in San Francisco. So
the only thing, you have to be capable of riding a skateboard.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that you'd want to be able to ride a longboard. But I had a longboard for years. I mean, when I first moved to the West Side, that was how I got around. And it's great fun. And the only reason I really haven't gotten the boosted board is because it just seems like the potential to seriously harm myself is so high on one of those things. It's taken so much work to get to stay alive and to be in a position to enjoy life that to lose it all because I got an electric skateboard and whiffed a stop sign or something is just kind of a deterrent for me to get one of those.
Well, I was certainly felt very safe on that compared to a skateboard. I would not step on the skateboard in high heels, but
right.
I'm looking forward to seeing these throughout Century City and Beverly Hills before regulations come into play with them.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, Bird seems to have the market cornered on these, but I don't understand what happens once you get a few more of these companies doing the same thing. I mean, to me, it seems like they have an amazing advantage from a business perspective because they don't have to spend any money on advertising. It's super visible. There's a lot of buzz around it because it's novel and remarkable. So people want to talk about it and tell their friends about it. But there isn't a lot of defensibility. You know, if another company came along called Mongoose or something and started littering the streets with competitive scooters or boards, suddenly it's just going to be junk all over the place. So I don't know what's going to happen there, but I would expect to start seeing these pop up in other cities. It seems like a great opportunity and seems like a no-brainer. So super exciting stuff.
Did you see Peter Thiel's monster bet?
On Bitcoin? Yeah. Did they say what the amount was or just that he has a lot of Bitcoin?
Hundreds of millions of dollars is what's quoted in the Wall Street Journal.
Whoa. Man. Did it say whether he did that recently?
Mid-2017.
Crazy. Wow, that makes me want to buy some Bitcoin.
As long as he's holding on to it, right?
Well, you know, it'd be one thing if he had bought it in 2012, 2013, and that's why he has such a huge amount. Because I think the people, the real winners in this whole crypto, because right now, the cryptocurrencies are really hot. Lots of people are investing into them. A lot of people are putting a lot on the line. Like it's a very frothy market right now. And I don't know where I come out on whether the long-term value is going to be there. Like Bitcoin to me feels a little bubbly. And I feel like a lot of the stuff that early on was the promise of Bitcoin has become challenging. That's just Bitcoin. Cause there are all these other cryptocurrencies. There's Ethereum, there's Bitcoin Cash, which is a fork of Bitcoin and all these different kinds. Bitcoin itself is tough because we thought that you'd be able to use it for common purchases. You could buy stuff on the internet with it or pay for things in retail stores with it. But recently, processing times for Bitcoin take forever. The fees for a single payment can be really high. Steam, which is a video game company, kind of have a similar model to Apple's App Store, where they sell video or they sell games through kind of a comparable app store. Up until recently, they were accepting Bitcoin as payments, but they stopped accepting it because people were paying as much as $20 as a processing fee to purchase a title.
Why is that?
I think it's just because Bitcoin has reached a scale of transactions and processing that makes the processing times take a much longer, and maybe as a result of that, the fees are much higher. I don't know enough about the technical aspects of it to really explain it. Just that that was one of the big things. It's you can use Bitcoin to pay for stuff now instead of your Visa card. But it doesn't seem to be playing out that way with Bitcoin specifically. But Ethereum, I think, solves a lot of those issues. I think Bitcoin Cash has a lot more bandwidth for transactions. You know, where Visa is processing thousands of payments per second, Bitcoin can only process much fewer. And it's a big challenge for the Bitcoin network. I think a lot of people think of these cryptocurrencies as companies or something, though, right? Almost like if I invested into Facebook on day one, here I'd be, you know, my investment would come back to me and hundreds or thousands folds, just like Peter Thiel, incidentally. But the thing about currencies is that they're not supposed to be volatile like Bitcoin is. Like, the whole promise of Bitcoin is to be a stable currency. And when you've got this thing where it's just appreciating like crazy, and then you have these wild swings where it crashes, and then Peter Thiel says he's got some, and then it goes right back up, and it's all over the place.
Yeah, because even recently it's been quite a swing, right? From almost 20,000 down to 15.
It reached as high as I think 19 or 20,000 and then dropped down. It kind of crashed down to 12, 13, 14, and then it's sort of recovered since then, but it's still very volatile and all over the place. When back in 2013 or so, Coinbase had just recently launched, and I was in, I guess, an initial batch of users that were using it. And at the time, they sent everybody 1/10 of a Bitcoin for free as a sign-up bonus, just to kind of get people using Bitcoin and to interact with the service a little bit. And at the time, it was worth $6. And then I recently logged in just before that big kind of crash down from when it was at 20. And that 1/10 of a Bitcoin at the time was worth something like $1,000 or thereabouts.
Wow.
So that's what makes me think that people who were early on Bitcoin made a fortune. Because if my $6 went to over $1,000, you could see how a lot of people make a lot of money in that scenario.
How do you cash out if you want to cash out?
They just ACH it into your bank account. You have a US dollar amount that you can transfer to Coinbase, so you can wire money to them and then they'll hold that balance for you, and they'll instantaneously convert that US dollar amount into any of the cryptocurrencies that they make available. And then when you want to cash out, you can instantly cash out. But the crazy thing about Coinbase is that in moments of great flux, like when it's crashing thousands of dollars, they'll halt buys and sells. Which is like super scary, because if you're sitting there and you think, I've got, if you want to get out of it, you realize, oh man, this is crashing, and you want to get out, they might have it shut down your ability to actually cash out.
Wow.
I think that if you can buy some, like, I'm very tempted to purchase some now and just forget about it for another couple of years, because I think in the long run, it'll probably continue along the trajectory that it's on right now. And I'm not saying like Bitcoin necessarily, but crypto in general. I think cryptocurrency is not going anywhere. I think there's gonna be a lot more competition for these things, and there already are so many different cryptocurrencies, and a lot of people who are super in this, paying attention to this space right now. It's become ridiculously hot. Like, crypto is out of control with how much, at least in technology, how much time and attention people are paying to it, even on a daily basis, just watching the market shifts in cryptocurrencies. It seems to be capturing a lot of people's imagination and increasingly investment and buzz. Like, I think it's crossed out of the experimental and exploratory thing into, okay, now it's a thing. Especially as Wall Street is getting involved, you see nation states, Russia, I think, is working on some kind of crypto ruble or something. I mean, China, I think, is working on their own kind of thing. Like, it's...
And celebrities are buying these mining machines.
If celebrities are doing it, you should follow, of course. And then not to mention ICOs and all that stuff. But it does make me a little worried because I saw Mark Suster, who's a venture capitalist here in Los Angeles, tweet about, he was talking to a yoga teacher. And she had put her entire, and this was before, I think he tweeted this before that crash, which makes it all the more like, ugh. She had put all of her savings into crypto and then took out a $15,000 credit card and bought all of, and put, maxed that out buying Bitcoin or something.
Oh, wow.
And then, you know, a couple of weeks later, it crashed down 30%, lost 30% of the value. It recovered a little bit, but not back up to $19,000. I don't think it's there right now. But you can imagine for somebody like that, if you just max out a $15,000 credit card buying crypto and then it dips 30%, that's a really bad place to be. So it's interesting. It's interesting. I wouldn't mess with it unless you're ready and willing to lose all the money that you put into it. But yeah, Peter Thiel, killing the game as usual.
Killing the game. I don't know. Everyone's talking about just those, like, how mining is. And we don't have to put this on, but like, literally how mining is where the money's at. And if you're able to get these machines and, like, they have, like, these little small ones where you could, you know, each one computes all these numbers,
yeah,
and makes all this money, or, like, the huge ones that are, like, millions of dollars.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of back in hand. So bummed. Not bummed, but it's crazy how...
Don't tell me you had an opportunity to buy one of the huge machines, Mike.
No, I was helping somebody else put together a rig. He bought a bunch of these, you know, back in 2012, 2013, I think there was a company called Butterfly Labs or something close to that, similar to that, who were selling these pre-configured rigs for Bitcoin mining. And he bought a bunch of them, but I don't think they ever shipped. This is why you gotta be so careful about this stuff, because there's so many scam artists and...
Yeah, because you don't really know, right?
Yeah, and these were those types of guys who, hey, we've got this hardware rig, it'll help you to mine Bitcoins, and they were selling them for a considerable amount of money. I mean, I think this guy put a lot of money into that, and they never arrived. So, but another dude that I was hanging with at the time also set up a whole computer network of computers in order to mine Bitcoins. But when you start to dig into the details, it's very energy intensive. You use a lot of electricity. You need a super powerful computer in order to make it effective. I mean, it's mining is definitely an interesting way to get them, but it's not as easy, I think, as just plugging in a computer and turning it on. Something that is really kind of funny that I've every once in a while you see these enterprising individuals. I remember one guy was an IT manager for either a school or a school district, and he got all the machines on his network mining Bitcoins and got busted for it, which is like hilarious.
Oh, wow.
Another company very recently in the past week or two, some plugin, a Chrome extension, I don't know if it was a game or if it was some kind of ad blocker or something, but with hundreds of thousands of installs, it was discovered that this plugin was mining Bitcoins on people's computers, which is kind of smart. I mean, why not? I don't think that's illegal. It's certainly not a good thing for your product to jack up people's CPUs. But at the end of the day, if that's how you pay for products and services, I mean, it'd be interesting if you could set your computer up such that if you're not using compute capacity that it has, like right now I've got this thing sitting here recording this podcast, but it's probably only taking advantage of 5 or 10% of this machine's CPU in order to record it. It'd be cool if I could just have this automatically sitting here mining coins while...
like at that percentage.
Yeah, just take the other 95% and just mine stuff. But I think that it's... I think as time goes on, it becomes more difficult to mine coins. The computation has to do in order to mine a coin, it becomes bigger and more intense as more and more of them get mined, so that it becomes more difficult to do it. So it's another one of these things where, unless you're going ham on some kind of farm that's purpose-built to mine bitcoins, I don't know that you're going to become an overnight millionaire with that kind of thing. A lot of people are investing, but that's what makes me so scared about it, is that as soon as a trend or something, especially where it comes to tech, where there's a lot of complexity and nobody understands it except for the 99.99 repeating percentage of people don't understand enough of it at all to give you specifics on that thing, but it's appreciating in value, it opens the door for scam artists and charlatans and bozos, really. I mean, you see people who were formerly spiritual yoga types who are now Bitcoin authorities, you know? You see companies who change their name, they add blockchain to their name, and the market value of their companies shoot up. There are so many instances of this where it just becomes a thing that nobody really knows what it is, but they know that there's some value and hype around it, and so they incorporate it into their own personal brand or into the business's brand, and all of a sudden it just becomes this runaway trend that nobody understands, but everybody's investing into, you know?
Seems like the time to stay away from it.
Yeah, it seems like it is, but then Peter Thiel puts hundreds of millions of dollars into it, and then you're like, well, Peter Thiel's done pretty well for himself, so, you know, I don't know. But who knows? You don't know why.
You wonder what that's really about, though.
Exactly. I mean, he could be doing that for any number of reasons. Yeah, exactly. It could very well be a thing where I'm sitting here hating on Bitcoin, but in a year or two, it's going to be up at 40,000, 50,000. And that's what's so maddening about it, is that you just don't know. I think it's pretty prudent in life. If you can't articulate and explain on a technical level something like the difference between Bitcoin and Ethereum and the history of these things, and if you can't articulate like currencies and how they work in a micro and macroeconomic environments, you should probably not be investing in this stuff. Like if you just went to a conference in an unrelated field and heard somebody on stage talking about Bitcoin, you shouldn't take out a $15,000 like credit card to buy currencies. As soon as it's a mainstream thing that's being covered on news stations or in the media, as soon as Pitbull or Paris Hilton are out there shilling cryptocurrencies, that's probably the time to back out of it, you know?
That's a reasonable conclusion, Mike.
That's just how I think about it.
Well, it looks like Peter Thiel actually is talking about it in the news, saying it's very underestimated.
Yeah, of course. That's because he's got $100 million in it now. If he can get a bunch of people to rally around it, that's going to double or triple. It's like 50 Cent. I think 50 Cent got into trouble at one point because he bought a bunch of stock in some penny stock company and then started shilling for it on social media and made millions and millions and millions of dollars. Peter Thiel probably got huge. In fact, it did. Bitcoin soared today on the news of Peter Thiel.
Did 50 Cent get in trouble for that?
I think that the SEC has something to say to him about it. But that's the thing about crypto, is that there's no regulation around it right now. So it's super weird. I mean, again, I wouldn't go all in on it. Don't like lose your house because you want to become a Bitcoin millionaire. But if you've got some money to invest, it's not a bad place. Where else are you going to put money, I guess? You know, stocks? Do you think stocks are as rigged and volatile as crypto can be?
I guess it depends on if what your approach is. You know, if your approach is... Why is his name escaping me?
Warren Buffett?
If you have Warren Buffett's approach...
Yeah.
Where you're looking at the company and how the company's actually performing, not what it's just telling the news it's performing,
yeah.
And you understand that and you're able to measure its growth with real data, stock market seems like a great place to...
Mm.
Invest in those kinds of companies.
Yeah.
Everything else is just a gamble, right?
Real estate. I mean, what are the main places people invest? You've got
real estate, stock market. I guess now technology.
Yeah.
Medical industry, food industry. Things that we'll always need.
Yeah.
New fun fact, one of our favorite theaters may be coming out with an IPO.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Who I pick?
Mm-hmm.
They might be IPOing? Man, crazy time for movie theaters to be.
Yeah.
I thought that was a business that was struggling.
You know, they sent out an email to some IPIC interested parties.
I didn't receive this email. How are you on the investor list?
And apparently they have 121 screens in 16 locations.
Mm.
And according to their projections, they have revenues that have grown by 22% over the last 4 years.
Yeah.
And they want to expand.
Interesting. And an IPO is the best way to do that, huh? That's crazy. Why would you want to become a public company? I mean, how much does it say how much capital they're trying to raise?
You know, they're in the early stages right now of kind of feeling out who would be interested in investing. But I remember when Virgin America launched their IPO, I was able to get involved in that. And Dave & Buster's, which is Dave & Buster's, you know.
Dave & Buster's makes a lot of sense.
But in both cases, you know, if you're a part of the IPO, it's... But, you know, who doesn't love IPICs? I mean, we love the luxury. We love the
that's the whole thing
experience and what they
their
offer
whole,
us.
Yeah, and IPIC is, just to add some context, IPIC has brought to market a luxury experience for watching movies. Most movie theaters, I feel like, the majority of the market has got to be these sort of, it's almost like being on an airplane where they're compact seats, they're kind of uncomfortable, there are no added benefits. It's like riding coach to see a movie.
Exactly.
And IPIC kind of came through with this really luxurious experience.
First class
experience. They have these bunco lounge recliners. You can kind of recline all the way back. They give you a blanket. They give you, somebody will come and bring you drinks and food, and it's pretty good. Got amazing waffle fries and meatball sandwiches.
They do have great
wine. Drinks. You can drink. They'll bring you drinks, which is great. And you can reserve your seats. So you go, when you purchase tickets for IPIC, you kind of pick out your seats. And so I think that's the only place in the movie theater market where you could, because they can charge a premium for that. It's not cheap.
But it's actually not that much more than a regular like AMC ticket. You're paying $20 almost for an adult ticket.
Yeah.
And IPIC's you're paying an extra $10-$15 for that luxury experience.
Yeah, it's totally worth it. And then when you get food and drinks and all that stuff, it's amazing. Another interesting thing that's happened in that space is one of the co-founders of Netflix. Have you heard of MoviePass?
Mm-mm.
So one of the co-founders of Netflix launched a company called MoviePass where you pay $12 a month and you get to see one movie a day for free, essentially, at any theater that participates in the MoviePass network.
Wow.
So it's kind of cool.
I have a feeling IPIC won't be on that list.
IPIC is not going to be on that list, right. It's for the rest of the market that's probably feeling the heat, because for your average movie theater, and I don't know what shifted in the market. Maybe it's just people, maybe it's like an economic recession that triggered a reduction in spending on movies, but for a long time, I feel like movie theaters are one of these industries that's been suffering.
Sure. Well, it was a place to go, right, for entertainment, but when you have Netflix at home, you make your own popcorn and candy.
Yeah, yeah. It's just better at home for the most part. So that's why something like IPIC can thrive. But again, I just can't imagine, like, why would you go public? There's not a private market. Wouldn't you rather deal with a handful of institutional investors than thousands of, in an IPO scenario. Suddenly now you have thousands of investors and you're subject to all this scrutiny. Because how much money do they, if you needed to raise hundreds of millions of dollars, that'd be one thing. Like, there aren't many places to get that kind of dough. But if they're going to raise, if they're looking to raise like in the millions or even tens of millions, like, there's not a private market that would fund that. I just don't understand an IPO. It seems like the burden of running a public company would be awful.
It's hard to say. Well, we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't mind them expanding and having more theaters to go to. More.
Yeah. Options. Is there only one in Los Angeles or just the Westwood
Pasadena.
One? Pasadena. Is Pasadena even Los Angeles, though? Like, is it considered?
Not technically.
Not
no.
technically?
Not technically.
Says so right on the tin.
It's in the county.
It's in the county. Yeah.